I'm a huge fan of the whole get everybody in a room together, you know. But not now.
Thanks, Ken.
Yeah, sorry.
Hello and welcome to Two Scrums Up, a show about our successes and missteps, practicing Scrum in an agency environment. While what works for us might not work for everybody, we hope our stories and advice are helpful. I'm John Ragazine, and with me as always is Ken Medley.
Hey John, and welcome everyone to the podcast. We have a special guest, a returning special guest, Jamie Olmsted. Welcome back to the podcast, Jamie.
Hello, thank you for having me back again.
Jamie is our friend and colleague. She is a senior agile process leader here at Alley. And today, you're going to share some stuff that you've been experimenting with lately. Things that I am happy to own that I have not messed around with too much. So I want to learn. I want to learn why it's cool. I want to learn what to look out for. And the topic for today is user story mapping.
I feel like when you say that, it should come up in a rainbow somehow. I know, I realize this is audio, but there's a rainbow with glitter and it says user story mapping that appears in
lots
front of
brass high instruments and
yeah, exactly.
User story mapping. All right. Yeah, but this is something that you have been experimenting with more often, and I wanted to learn more about it for sure. I guess let's start at the top. How did you find out about user story mapping, and how have you been using it thus far?
Yeah, so with user story mapping, I'm trying to remember, it's been a couple years now, but I first got my hands on Jeff Patton's book, which is called User Story Mapping, Discover the Whole Story, Build the Right Product. And honestly, I can't remember how I came to the book, but I think I was trying to figure out better methods for planning large chunks of work that are coming to us, features that we need to build, or like even a project when you first get handed that scope of work and you're trying to wrap your head around the requirements for what the team's going to build and somehow translate that in a meaningful way into your team's backlog and somehow convey what this product is supposed to do from start to finish. And it can be really challenging. It sounds like a simple thing where it's like, yeah, just read through this document and like everyone's going to understand and we'll know exactly what we need to do step by step. But it's not that simple. So I had read Jeff Patton's book. And normally, like, I love me some professional development, but the first thing I think of when I'm like, I want to spend some time really digging into agile concepts and everything, I'm not like, I'm going to go and read a book. I'm going to sit down with a book. Usually I like conferences. I like podcasts. I like, you know, I feel like mediums that are a little more engaging. But I started reading this book and it's like everything started clicking into place. And I was like, that happens to us. That happens to us. Like this guy is speaking to our experience. So like immediately I was like, okay, I'm interested. Like I want to know more about what this concept of user story mapping is. So I think it is one of the first books that I bought on my Kindle. And I actually used the Mac Kindle app and I highlighted the crap out of it. And there are so many notes attached to it. It's silly. But yeah, I got really excited just to like read something that resonated with me and my team's experiences. I think the last time that had happened was when I read Jeff Sutherland's book. So yeah, it was really exciting.
We have the audio rainbow of user story mapping. We have the reading rainbow of taking a look in a book. But like what I want to know is like, when am I as a Scrum Master going to engage with this concept?
Yes. Yeah. That's a great question. This is like why I'm excited to talk about it. So the whole concept, let me start with a quote that comes from one of the clients that Jeff was working with that sort of summarizes the experience that I think a lot of us have when it comes to approaching a new project and understanding what we're trying to build. So the quote starts as, we spend lots of time working with our customers. We work hard to understand their goals, their users, and the major parts of the system that we could build. Then we finally get down to the details, the pieces of functionality we'd like to build. In my head, I see a tree where the trunk is built from the goals and desired benefits that drive the system. Big branches are users, the small branches and twigs are capabilities that they need. Then finally, leaves are the user stories, small enough to place into development iterations. Great, fantastic. Sounds beautiful, right? You've got this vision of this tree. Yes, very poetic. Then he continues and says, after all that work, after establishing all that shared understanding, I feel like we pull all the leaves off the tree, load them into a leaf bag, then cut down the tree. That's what a flat backlog is to me, a bag of context-free mulch. And as soon as I read that, I was like, oh, like flat backlog. Like, what is a flat backlog? So let me touch on that a little bit. So essentially, when you're looking at your backlog and you're looking at listed in priority from top to bottom, you've essentially got a flat backlog. It's like a stack of index cards almost that someone is handing to you with requirements for how to build out whatever it is, like reach the goal that you're trying to achieve. What user story mapping tries to do is, instead of having a flat backlog, you're mapping out the entire feature and this sort of almost like a timeline of everything that the user needs to do from the start to the end. And ideally at the end of it, what you could do, or not even at the end, at the very beginning when your developers are starting work on it, they should be able to actually explain to someone, a complete stranger, what exactly they're building and what it's supposed to do from end to end, where that can be very challenging with a flat backlog if you are just looking at a list of requirements. There's not context there. But I think user story mapping gives a lot more context to what a team is trying to achieve. So that's where the appeal came in for me. But I just love the analogy of the mulch bag.
Right.
And I was just like, oh, I need this. I need
definitely this. I can see it being also, when you said index cards, I thought of playing cards, and it can be like, you know, you draw the card from the top, or you're playing Go Fish and you spread all the cards out on the table, right? You're trying to like see everything. But then what you're also layering onto is then those things become organized. So you're trying to get everything visible, then also, you know, structured out.
Yep.
Jamie mentioned something about, you know, having a user, like being able to take anyone off the street and being able to explain to them, you know, what this thing does without them having like any context really. And I made me think a few years back, I was working with a team that was using story mapping, and we actually wrote all of our user stories on physical cards in crayon. Crayon because, you know, it's kind of something with, you know, it's, crayons are usually associated with, you know, children, you know, and we wanted to like have that like thing psychologically going on in our mind of like, we need to be able to explain this to a child, like someone who doesn't understand. So it's like, just draw pictures if you need to, write it in crayon, like as simple as it could be. And it really helped us kind of, you know, like you're talking about, map out this, you know, whole feature at a level where you didn't need to have any context, you know, for what was going on.
Yeah, I love that. And I think the pivotal part of user story mapping that is lacking from a flat backlog is what can be referred to as the backbone of the user story map. And it's essentially a timeline. It's a horizontal view of all of these different large activities that a user would do. And throughout the whole development of the project, that timeline, that backbone, should never change. Those are like the key points of engagement that user has with whatever tool that you're building. And by having that laid out and like the concept and the understanding that the user has to do these things no matter what during every single iteration, it sort of helps to bring into focus what the true MVP is that you need to build for your first iteration. Because if you are missing out on any of those larger activities, the user's missing out on a huge piece of that experience. So I think that's where the context lives that that user story mapping like brings to the table. I really like it. That actually got me thinking, Ken, about an example I like to use for any of the teams that I've shared this with. And it's the idea of mapping out getting ready in the morning before work. Sometimes it's helpful for me to actually use a real world example of how you could actually map this out theoretically with user story mapping. So you're getting ready in the morning before work and you're trying to think, what are the things that I have to do from beginning to end? I got to shower. I got to brush my teeth. I got to get dressed.
You're not speaking my language.
John, what do you need to do?
You need to get from being horizontal in bed to vertical at your ceiling. please continue, please.
No. But that's like a great point though, because I'm going to sort of like veer off a little bit to a point that I think is important. User story mapping is really good at highlighting either holes in your plan or excess in your plan. So maybe that is actually the bare minimum that somebody needs to do to be able to be ready for work, is literally get from being horizontal to vertical and making it to their desk. You know, like maybe that is actually what the timeline just has to be, and all this other stuff, it's just, you know, iterations on top of that. But continuing with that whole theory.
No, I think this is good, because when you were talking about like I liked when you called it a backbone versus a timeline, because timeline makes me feel it's very like set and fixed. And I was like, oh, well, you know, I get kind of wigged out when you're like, we're going to figure everything out at the start of the project, and then we know what's going to happen and the backbone won't change and this and that. But I guess what it really you have to focus on is making sure that that backbone, that like minimum viable need that you're fulfilling, is as straightforward and general as possible, right?
Yes, exactly. And the goal is for that not to change. You know, you don't want that changing throughout all these different iterations, because then you're changing what your scope and your MVP really is. Like, I would say the more dialed in you can get to that and simplified you can make it, the better. But I will say that that is one of the hardest pieces to try and get right with a team when you're working on actually doing user story mapping. But I think the discussion we just had is like a perfect example of how it's like, no, really, like, what do we need to dial into bare minimum that everyone has to do as part of this process? And the rest is just like layered iterations on that.
Yeah, no, it definitely makes a lot more sense to me. I know I was being a little bit of a twit in bringing it up, but I think it assuages some of my anxiety already as you introduce this topic.
Yeah.
So let's say that, you know, I did all the reading. I was ready to go, ready to start going on it. Can you walk us through maybe with a real world example? Like how you would use this with a group, like who's in the room, how are you laying into this, how long does it take? I would love to know sort of like the hows around using this strategy.
Yeah, this is a really interesting piece of it, like actually putting it into practice. Like I think as a concept, everything is like ringing true. Like I can definitely identify with a lot of the challenges that it's trying to address, and then it's like putting it into action in the real world. How does that actually go? So what I have found throughout different experimentations with this is I would recommend keeping the group that you are working on a user story map with to a very small group of stakeholders versus trying to have the stakeholders and an entire team come in at the very beginning to try to figure out what this product or feature is going to look like. What I've experienced is that stakeholders and product owners are going to be making key decisions about the direction of whatever feature that you're developing, right? So that's why it's so key to have them sort of define that backbone. Because what I've found in instances that I've facilitated is that team members, you know, developers and whatnot might have a lot of really great ideas, and want to influence the direction that a product is taking. But at the end of the day, the product owner is going to make that call. I think it's good to have that input, but really I've found that it can get, I don't want to say unproductive, because it is productive to get feedback, but I feel like the actual facilitation and the process sort of loses focus. I think it's great to bring in your development team and other non-stakeholders to sort of build out the stories underneath that backbone, if that makes sense.
Okay. Yeah. So you get your stakeholders, you get in a room, you get in a Zoom call, you know, what happens next?
You have the stakeholders, and I think what's important to sort of dial them into is who is the user that you are building this map out for? Because often we have multiple end users that we're trying to help out with whatever we're building. But I think there's to be able to dial into one and focus on their experience with the tool, like this key user, that is going to help you actually build out that backbone in a way that addresses all of that particular user's needs versus if you're going to try and make a backbone for every single user that interacts with this system that you're creating, it's going to get really complicated. It's going to get really hard. So I would say focus on users first, maybe even doing part of the workshop on user personas. That's like a whole other topic in and of itself, but really getting into understanding what is that person trying to get out of this? What experience are you trying to give them? And how do they interact with the system you're building? So I would say focus on that first with stakeholders. And then the second piece, once you have dialed in on whomever that user is going to be, you want to start actually thinking of the higher level activities that that person is going to be doing. And that's what's building out that backbone. So the example I was using earlier, getting ready in the morning for work. Let's say it's a little more complex than just horizontal to vertical.
Right.
And we're doing, you would think this person needs to get up and they're going to brush their teeth and then they're going to go for a run and then they're going to take a shower, get dressed, cook breakfast. You know, those are some high level activities that this person is going to engage in. Every single person who is going through this process will do those things in some order. Obviously, each of those items is up for discussion, but that's sort of like a high level backbone for that activity, for that user. So then you would start going into, you have that defined, right? Then you might want to bring in the team and actually talk about how do we actually get each of these things done? Like, what are the steps that we need to take to put those things into action? And that's where you start actually building out, in theory, what might be referred to as the ribs of the skeleton. So you've got your backbone, and then you have your ribs, which are these vertical sort of slices below each of these activities.
User spooky mapping.
Spooky mapping. I love it. That's also partially why I was drawn to this wonderful concept.
Absolutely.
So, Jamie, when I hear user story, I hear in my mind, like you mentioned user personas, but in user stories, my mind goes back to, as a user persona, I want whatever, so I can whatever. So in this scenario of getting ready for work, our backbone might be like, as an employee, I want to make sure I can get out of bed on time and get to work so I can contribute to my team and earn a living, right? And then so that's my backbone, right? That's my user persona. And then maybe I'd have like individual tasks for, you know, go from horizontal to vertical, a ticket for like brush my teeth, a ticket for get dressed. And is that kind of what you're saying there?
Yeah.
Or some of those things like assumed, you know, like, I don't know, you just get ready for work and go, you know?
Or you have it be like hygiene, you know what I mean? And then you're doing like teeth brushing, hair combing.
Right.
Yeah.
Like
so I personally, okay. So this is something that I have tried to combat within myself, and I think anyone who in the Agile world works within Jira, there's this awful thing that happens where Jira starts creeping into all these concepts, and then you start thinking, oh, this activity translates to an epic, right? What does an epic mean? Like, you start introducing all of these parts and pieces of the tool that you're using into these concepts and practices. And that's one thing that I struggled with, where it's like, no, this activity is a larger user story that will have tasks that fall underneath it. And I had to be very careful that I wasn't identifying those activities as epics, you know? And I know that this sort of touches on your question, Ken, but like, it immediately made me think of that, because I'm like, oh, epic level. And it's like, that's not a Scrum concept. Epics are not part of Scrum.
Right.
So I would say be cautious of that.
That's what I wanted to kind of hear you unpack and try kind of share your experience. Yeah. I know that regardless of the tool that folks use, we often like try to let that tool dictate our process. And at least in my experience with user story mapping, like it's sort of like a blank canvas. It's like we can paint whatever we want. You know, and it's kind of freeing, in my experience, to the team and to everyone involved, of like, I'm not stuck to what this tool it provides me with. Like, I can do anything I want. And so I'm glad you touched on that. Hey, John, how was lunch?
It was good, Ken, but I was talking to some friends of mine. They work at this other company, and they're on a Scrum team. They're trying to get work done, but because they say that estimation is too hard using Slack or Zoom, they're just having one person do all the pointing for the entire team.
Oh, no.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Did you tell them about HelperBot?
HelperBot? What's that?
There's a better way. HelperBot is a friendly Scrum assistant that enables your team to do planning poker estimation directly in Slack. It's perfect for distributed and co-located teams alike. Using HelperBot is simple. It works with Jira too.
Oh, so instead of like holding up fingers on a Zoom call or using planning poker cards or just dumping out the whole thing and having one person estimate, you can have the entire team estimating in real time in Slack?
You nailed it. Have your friends go to helperbot.ally.co, where they can sign up to be a free beta tester.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. Let me go to that website right now. Oh, here it is. Spend more time planning and less time pointing with HelperBot.
Learn more at helperbot.ally.co.
Yeah, I want to expand on your question a little bit more, but I did want to at least touch on that. And I think, you know, our backlog, the listing in the tooling that we use is a perfect example of a flat backlog, because it literally is just a list of requirements. There's no way to visualize that whole process. So going back to your question, I see all of those activities as user stories. So the showering would be a user story for me. Brushing my teeth would be a user story for me. But then below those items, you have these supporting tasks. So those could be technical tasks. So for example, you have shower, right? And then below, the task that I would have would be, I need to shampoo my hair. I need to shave. I need to have a towel, make sure I take time to meditate or whatever it is. And so those would be all the pieces, the building blocks for that larger user story. And that's where I think including the team is really important. That's where those creative ideas start getting being put out there. And I've had a lot of success breaking teams up into smaller groups. So if I have a group of, let's say, 10 people on the team, developers, testers, whomever, break them up into smaller groups and then give them like a portion of that backbone. So give them like three of the activities in the backbone and say, I want you to build out all of the supporting tasks that would come underneath that to actually achieve that thing. And then what I do is I give them a certain set amount of time. They brainstorm, get as creative as you want. Like there are no limitations in this this part of the exercise. And then I will have the teams flip. And then the teams will look at what the other team has brainstormed for all of those different tasks, and then they build on top of that even more. So it's sort of like everyone gets a chance to touch a different part of the journey that this user is going on with the backbone and all these activities.
It's a great way to get team buy-in too. Yeah. You know, they're helping make this whole thing, you know, and they get a say in it. And hopefully somebody in this example you're using, hopefully somebody is going to come up with get coffee, drink yes. coffee. Like, I haven't heard coffee in this thing yet, and I'm starting to get a little panicky.
I can't believe I forgot that. That's like my number one.
we're a global show. Yeah. You know, so maybe tea. It's just getting
coffee,
tea.
Coffee, tea, yeah. You know.
Coffee, tea, monster. But,
caffeinate.
Yeah, totally.
Exactly.
So that makes sense to me. And I'm going to come back to what I am fixating on, I guess, which is like you have a backbone, which is a timeline, which is like a horizontal, like start, finish. These are the activities that you go through. And let's say like you've gone through that. You've had your team come in. You've had these small working groups. Folks have layered in the boughs and the branches and the twigs and the stems and that, all this stuff. And so it's really looking fantastic. Like, how do you then, I guess, have this inform your work? Because I know we talked earlier about you don't want to have, like, you don't want to cloud your thinking with the patterns of, like, whatever software we use or how we engage with each other or whatever like that. But at some point, this has to translate into work that develops this product or this feature or this project. So how does that work? Are you kind of like taking whatever you think is cool, or are you prioritizing different parts of the backbone? I'm trying to get my head around that a little bit.
Yeah, no, that's a perfect question. So the next step within this, I'm trying to illustrate this in everybody's mind since I don't have a nice whiteboard or something in front of me. It's very fun trying to discuss these concepts because they are a very visual thing. So once you have this map sort of set out with the backbone and all of these supporting tasks underneath each of these items, the awesome thing that really drew me to user story mapping is now what you do is you can prioritize those supporting tasks in order from top to bottom, right? So take some time with stakeholders and say, okay, for the first iteration of this, what is the bare minimum that we need to do for an MVP to get a user through every single one of these high-level activities? So an example of this might be you're looking at this story, this whole feature that we've talked about with getting ready for work in the morning. And one of the things that I personally don't do at all is go for a run. So any of those supporting things, maybe those get dropped to the very bottom of that whole map. That's for a later iteration. Like, we don't need to worry about that for the first go at this. And then what you're able to do once you've prioritized everything from top to bottom, you actually slice each of these horizontally to give yourself an idea of iterations or sprints, for example. You could even do sprint planning this way for a feature. And you would make a slice for the first one for all of your MVP features. And then you can think about, like, what are the next steps that we want to do to layer upon this MVP? Cool. Make a slice underneath that, like a horizontal line underneath those stories. That's going to be your second iteration. And so on and so forth. So you essentially have this like mapped out plan of every single iteration that you're going to go through. Now, what I really like about it is that then what you can do is make sure that your first few iterations are going to be really top heavy, because you want to keep space in the future iterations to introduce new tasks and new stories that come up
right
as you're developing. And you're sort of able to create that space by not overloading the iterations.
Carving it out into like MVP and like nice to haves and like whatever terminology you want, if you're using like Moscow or whatever. Mm-hmm. At some point, you're going to have what the MVP needs to be from the stakeholders' point of view. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so what sounds exciting to me is that you're making the work that needs to be done visible to everyone. And I always like making work visible, whether it's what we're doing, what we've done, or what we need to do. But at some point the rubber hits the road, right? Like, you have
right
to get stuff done. So like, you have this MVP packet of stuff. How do you get the team cranking on it?
So I would personally take all those different stories, and I think a lot of that does actually, it does get dictated by the tools that you're using. So I would load all of those items into Jira, these user stories, essentially. And then hopefully what you've done is you've carved out all those different iterations. You've sort of sliced up all those different tasks. So you have an understanding of the roadmap going forward for what you're going to accomplish within each iteration. So I would take those and translate them into whatever project management tool that I'm using and get them queued up within each of those sprints. So everyone knows what the roadmap at this point in time is for this product. Now, that being said, that can change. Like, the whole point is that you're keeping those later iterations open for new things that you discover as you're working through your MVP, and then maybe your next sprint, you decide, you know, I want to layer something else on top of this that I think would be great for the user. And the product owner is like, yes, I think that's an awesome idea. You've got that space in those later iterations because you're not loading them up from the start. So that's what I would do in terms of next steps. I think it's important to know that the product owner is still going to be making those decisions on prioritization and what needs to get done first. But what I love about it is that the team can still share all of these creative ideas and suggestions for what could make things better. You're not locked into this list of things. And I think it allows a little bit more creative freedom and input into the process.
Yeah. Because, and again, I come back to this idea of the main stem or the backbone or whatever. And like, those things are laid out in such a way that like they're kind of non-negotiable. Like, as much as like agile is like we'll figure it out as we go, or we'll change tack if we have to, and we'll be reactive and responsive and like regular people over the course of a project, but like usually you don't start a project being like, we're going to build a sandwich, and at the end you like build a car, you know, like you like right. Like, you might change the meat or whatever, or I don't know, the non-gluten bun or whatever you are, that's fine. But like, you have some idea of like the product, that's the minimum viable product, like that product itself has some bounds around it, and so you're working towards that. You're not going to start coding a website and end up with a sweater, for example.
Right. I love, you know? That the other thing about user story mapping, there are so many good analogies you can use as this we're is just, finding. Well,
like, we're, it's so funny because like I'm, you know, senior analogy anyway, but like, when you're dealing with something that's so visual, something that's so tactile, like, you can't help but start like trying to communicate it through visuals that you have in your head. Yeah. You know,
can I just add something to that? Like, one of the challenges that I've encountered while actually working through like facilitating this process is, this is a very, like you said, John, visual and tactile approach to planning. Some people's brains do not work well in that sort of manner of learning or absorbing information. Some people would much rather just be hands-on. Some people need to hear it. Some people would rather read through everything, like literally have a document just listing out everything. But this is incredibly helpful for people who absorb information visually. And I have found that it can be really challenging for people who don't necessarily process information that way.
Yeah, I think being aware of the stakeholders' ways of understanding and knowing feeds into it. But like, it even to come full circle, Ken, what you talked about earlier, which is like, y'all use crayons and paper. And you could draw or write or do whatever, but like, you're kind of starting at a foundational point that took a lot of the cruft of adulthood away. You know, yeah, what I mean? Like, you're not using like a pen or a stylus or a whiteboard or like a fancy project management software. You're using like paper and crayons. Like, mm-hmm. How much more basic and how much more foundational can you be to the human experience right now?
Yeah.
Yeah. We're just trying to like not overthink it. And that's one of the things I think user story mapping can really aid with. I mean, especially if you don't start using, start a project using user story mapping, you know, it's sometimes a good way to just kind of hit pause and go, well, our backlog, now we have like, I don't know, 1,000 tickets, in the backlog now? And, you know, like, are they important? How, I don't know. Well, let's do a user story mapping. Let's figure out, are these things even necessary and where do they fit? And you might realize that a lot of those things are, you know, were things that we thought we needed, but we don't. And we talked a little bit about that too in our backlog refinement episode, where it's okay to remove things from the backlog as close won't do, or, you know, whatever. But yeah. I think user story mapping is a good way to just help visualize everything, you know, the basic level.
Yeah. And it's different too, because like so often, even if we say like, yeah, it's the backlog, it's cool, it's just like an idea space, it's a, you know, parking lot, it's a whatever it is. But Scrum is all about these commitments. You're like, you're committing to these things. And you start building this like Jenga tower of like, to do this, we have to do that and that and that and that and that. We can't forget. And if I change this one thing, I'm not sure how it'll affect the overall picture. So you sort of like have this blueprint or this map at the start that you can at least have some idea about the relationships of things, so that you know what you can change and what maybe you should be a little bit more cautious about.
Right. I have another analogy that I need to share, because it made it click for me too. Not everyone knows that prior to coming into tech, I actually have a degree in fine art. So I have, this analogy helps me a lot. So when you're actually painting or drawing or trying to understand the composition of a picture, right? So in this case, the feature is this picture, this beautiful picture you're trying to paint. What you're taught is that you need to map everything out from the beginning, the whole composition, right? And that could be just a rough sketch in the beginning. And what I often, as like a young high schooler, like doodling in my sketchbook would do, I'd always just start with the face. And I just keep working on that face and it would look fantastic, right? And then all of a sudden I would realize I have no space left on the page for the rest of whatever I'm trying to draw. So the whole concept of user story mapping is literally mapping out your composition roughly ahead of time. So you have a plan for where you're heading, and then you are iterating time and time, building out that picture more and more. So you don't run into that instance of like, oh crap, I don't have enough space. Or maybe the proportion of this thing is completely off now because I've been focusing so hard on this one piece and I'm not looking at the big picture. I'm missing out on the whole story of what this user has to do in this feature. So that was another analogy that really like helped me understand that you need to understand how all these different pieces work together to make sure that this whole feature functions as one thing, versus just pieces and parts that we're just tacking together.
Yeah, no, that's really powerful for me. I had an art class in college. It was a charcoal class, and you'd have a big sheet of paper and you'd have a bunch of like objects, right? And you were drawing it. So you're doing those things, you're sketching in like, put a circle here, a triangle there, and like lightly do those things in. You see it all the time with comic book art or even animation art, where it's like really light penciling a little bit, and people are just sort of like cross hat, you know, their face is like an oval with like a vertical and a horizontal line, and then you slowly layer things in, and then you do inking over the top and blah blah blah. But like the whole point is like you had all these objects and you would draw them all out, and then at the end of the day or at the end of the session, the teacher would come and cut off the like rightmost 3 inches or 4 inches of the paper. Ooh. And say, okay, fit everything back in again. And so like you have to keep starting over. Yeah. And that forces you to realize that like if you don't consider the whole thing, there's like big effects to it. Yeah. And you can't be too precious about what you're layering in. You know what I mean? But that idea of like it's sketches, it's the layout, it's sort of like figuring out where things go. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the same deal as anything. Like if you have to decorate a room and the thing you do first is just like, I'm going to get a couch and like plop it down. And then you have this like giant couch, you know, that can't face where the TV is going to go, or like where the bookshelf is, or like the reading chair is not by the lamp, like all those things. It's like not getting ahead of yourself. It's like being really deliberate. And so like, what is more deliberate than a full day session with crayons and Post-its, right, Ken?
Right.
If we're releasing this in October, I don't know when this is actually going to come out, but another thing that I really love that is not coming from me, who loves a spooky thing or two, Jeff Patton uses in his book, an analogy to a Frankenstein, that often we are just building these Frankenstein like features where we have different parts and pieces, and then we're just sewing them all together the best that we can. But at the end of the day, it's not like this fully complete human. I feel like that's like a philosophical question, though. I shouldn't say it that way.
No, I see it. I get it. You know, I remember, and this is like somewhat related, but it's sort of like, I remember hearing a story of how they used to build fighter plane, like cockpits and stuff, like way back in like World War II era or something. And like, they would be like, well, we have a standard size, right? Like we pulled like all the soldiers in the world and like we found the middlemost height. And so we're going to build it to that scale. Mm-hmm. And then you have these like really tall, really short pilots that suddenly couldn't like reach the pedals or fit with the cockpit, you know, dome down or whatever. And it wasn't taking a complete picture. It was instead like being like, it was setting the wrong backbone, you know? The backbone was like, everybody's 5'8", go. And like, well, no, you know, not everybody is.
I think like in general though, the point and the appeal to user story mapping in general is context, right? Seeing the big picture and understanding what you're trying to achieve, you know, versus focusing in on requirement by requirement and then seeing where it takes you. It's like construction as a design tool does not work, right? Like you need to step back and look at the big picture and have that context. And user story mapping is a process for getting that context. And I think that is sorely lacking on teams. We are not able to give that to them all the time. And that's what was so appealing to me, is like, how can I have this thing that I can literally give to them and they'll be like, I understand the whole thing, start to finish, super easily, and it's clear, and then they're allowed to sort of jump into that space and then be creative and layer all these different things on top of it. Like, it's just a quick way to give that context to your team and get them involved. So that's like the greatest appeal to me with all of this, and that I think was sorely lacking prior. With the user story mapping facilitation that I've done, when I've done like workshops on this, the outcome that I've seen from those has been this ability to dial into what the true MVP actually is, to get somebody on that journey, that backbone, and understand the absolute like bare minimum requirements to get this into a user's hands. And they will be able to do everything that they need to do to have a functioning product that is enjoyable to use in that first iteration. I think it's really allowed people to dial into that instead of having all these separate pieces that we think we need for an MVP and trying to smush them all together. It's thinking through the full process, that context, that mapping out, that composition that I was talking about, versus just dialing in on certain features. So I think it helped everyone to sort of step back and really talk through, what is it that this user needs in this first iteration versus these all these different exciting things that we want to build out, that at the end of the day isn't going to get that person through that backbone, you know, and making sure that it is a valuable experience from the first iteration. I think it helped people to just focus in on that and have that just taking that look at it and being a little bit more skeptical with how we are actually mapping out this whole process versus just, like I said before, a list of requirements, which doesn't give anybody any context. So that's what I found.
Yeah. And thinking about, you know, MVPs and sort of like what can be post-launch, what can be phase two, what can be whatever. It's so often to sort of like either things that are not overly exciting or stuff that's really expensive or complicated. And it can at times kind of like sweep the legs out from underneath the product, because like you don't have this like clutch thing you needed. The clarity and sort of like the visibility that this process appears to give to a team, it's nice. It really sets the kind of like the level, sort of like, this is what we're going to do. This is where we're going to go. This is how we're going to get through it. And at the end of it, we're going to have this thing. How you get there, how you tackle certain things, that can still be handled, you know, from a super close day-to-day level as you figure stuff out. But having that sort of like guiding light for the backbone of what you're delivering. Sounds pretty exciting to me.
I love that. This idea of like a North Star, essentially, with that backbone. I would challenge everyone who is interested in implementing this to ask their team at the end of the workshop, explain to me what this does, what the user does with this tool from start to finish. Walk me through it. Like, I have no idea what this is. And ideally, you want everyone to be able to do that with confidence. And at the end of it, they're like, oh, I actually get this whole thing. I know what needs to happen. And they can easily just walk you through it. I think that's a sign of success.
It provides clarity. I like it. Thank you for joining us today. Two Scrums Up is hosted by me, Ken Medley, an Agile Process Leader at Alley, as well as the Director of Agile Process, John Ragazine.
Our logo is by Kelsey Lakotis, and our theme music is by Chris Montgomery.
Two Scrums Up is a podcast distributed by Alley. Learn more at alley.co.
Our spooky special guest today was Jamie Olmsted. Jamie, it's always a pleasure having you on the show. Thank you for coming back on again. And before you leave, can you let us know the Fibonacci number of the day?
I'm going to go with 13. Let's keep with the spooky feel and stick with lucky number 13.
Bats and werewolves and a moonless night. Fantastic. Jamie, thanks again. Really appreciate it. This was fun.
Thanks, Jamie.
Thank you.
Yes, Ken, you have a story?
5'7.5", according to my driver.
I like to round up. I give you the five.
Okay, all right.
You're doing all right.
That's nice. Thanks.
That's okay, bud.
For those of you who cannot see us, Ken was literally holding up his license and pointing to it as proof.
Have to put your standing desk like in sitting position but still stand, and so you look like a giant.